Hello there and welcome to Full Chat with me, David Prutton.
And me, Ewan Thomas, celebrating all things we love about being on two wheels. Now, Full Chat is powered by Bikeshore. As the UK's largest independent motorbike insurance broker, Bikeshore will tailor a quote for your exact needs and help you save money on your annual bike, scooter or moped insurance and much, much more. They're brilliant.
Don't forget to please press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from so that you never miss an episode, or you can watch the whole wonderful thing on YouTube right now.
Okay, right. Today's special guest, I'm going to start by saying I think he's the coolest guest we've had in terms of he looks the part and he has got the dream job. He is an explorer and many, many more things than that. It's the best job you can think of if you love being on two wheels and going all around the world. He recently covered 54,000, yes, 54,000 kilometers in just 12 months across Argentina, Peru, Chile, Bolivia, Iraq, South Africa, Lesotho, where I don't even know where that is, Namibia, Botswana, Zimbabwe, Zambia, Kurdistan, Ireland, France, Switzerland, and Whitley Bay. He is, of course, the one and only Billy Ward. Welcome, Billy.
Hey, that was a hell of an intro, dude. I'm feeling a bit stressed now.
Well, where is Lesotho? Is that in Africa somewhere? Where is that?
They call it the Kingdom in the Mountains. It's called Lesotho. The Kingdom in the Mountains. It's a small country within a country. It's a small country within the middle of South Africa. And even though it's a country within a country, when you cross over the border, everything changes there. The weather, the climate, the people, the houses, the animals, the scenery, the colour of the grass, everything just changes. It's quite a weird, what kind of weird place, but an incredibly cool place. So it's a really cool place to go. Has a very, very famous pass for motorcyclists called the Sarnie Pass. And the Sarnie Pass is probably in your top 10 of motorcycle trails to have done in your sort of life, because it's proper hardcore in the middle of nowhere. And if it goes wrong, you're in a sort of dodgy scenario with big drops down the side of the road. And yeah, so it's a really, really cool place. Get it on the tick box for anywhere you want to plan in the future in terms of a good off-road motorcycle adventure.
I mean, this has already got the feel of something a little different to what we've already talked about, Billy. And it's just such a pleasure to have you on. I mean, way down into the back end of the pod, we're going to ask about dream rides. We're going to roll right back from that, because my word, my friend, you've been some wonderful places. And that, I mean, just at the last 12 months, for example, some challenging locations, and we just don't mean Whitley Bay, of course. How did you end up on that particular journey, doing that route, doing that insane mileage?
Okay, so I won't start at the very beginning, but in 2005, I married a really beautiful divorce lawyer. Stunning. I mean, she was stunning, and she was in proper good money. And I thought, I've made it. I've literally made it here. I've married this beautiful woman, so attractive, intelligent, articulate, loaded, great career. So how do you think that happened to end for me, Dave? How do you think that ended?
I'll go for really badly.
it really ended in what they call an 80-20 one-off split. And 80 was for her, 80%, and 20 was for me. And that was 2005. Wow. So that was a proper disaster of a divorce, like, you know. And and so I walked away from that divorce feeling pretty badly burnt and pretty roughed up. And I bought a brand new KTM 990 to sort of smother all my woes. And I got on the bike and I rode from Whitley Bay to Cape Town. And I did that just to sort of escape everything. And I've been a biker like from the beginning, like, but I've never really done adventure biking where you've gone off and done, you know, I've gone to maybe the Isle of Man, or I've gone to Wales for the day, or gone up to Scotland, you know, for 2 or 3 days, but never did the hardcore, well, if you can call it hardcore, but never did the proper adventure riding where you've gone different countries and I'd never done that before. So I was terrified. Like I remember I got to Mauritania on this brand new bike. You know, when you get a brand new bike, you're terrified of dropping it, terrified of scratching it. When cars park next to it in the car park, you're sort of going, aye, you know, it's like all that over the top stuff. Yeah. And I remember my first night in Mauritania. So Morocco is pretty cool. Like, you know, I do Morocco a lot. And you know, it can feel as if you're in the 12th century, but at the same time, you feel reasonably safe in Morocco. But when you cross over that border, you go through a minefield. So the border from Morocco into Mauritania is a minefield. And you have to go through the trail that's made a gravel, sandy trail. And both sides of the road are mines. And there's signs saying, minefield, skull and crossbow, don't go on the fucking mines. Like, you know, and you're thinking, okay, don't go on the mines, don't go on the mines. And then all of a sudden there's a traffic jam up ahead where people are getting stopped at the border and they haven't got the right papers. And the guards are going, come. And you go, what? And they're going, go around, go through. And I'm going, no, I don't want to go over there. And he's going, come. So in the end, you're going through the minefield. I get through the border, get through okay. And the first night, I'm out in the desert. And I was really, really scared, just on my own. And before I went, I bought one of these wire ropes. You know, wire ropes with a combination lock, like strapping things to your bike. I just kept thinking, I'm going to wake up in the morning in my little tent in the desert and the bike's gone. You know, everything in my life is in the bike and it's gone. So I took the panniers off, put them in the tent, took, you know, my Garmin GPS off, put that in, you know, anything that could get robbed, I put in the tent. And then I got the wire rope and I put it around my ankle and I put it through the bottom of the zip in the tent and I put the other end onto the back wheel of the bike and put the padlock on it. So I was they're not going to take my bike, you know, they're them, whoever they are, by the way, they're not going to get me, like, you know.
Can I just say, hang on a minute, you've gone through a divorce against a divorce lawyer, you're really stressed out, and instead of going on, you're not selling it as like a nice relaxing time to get over things, you're going somewhere where you think, forget, your bike's going to get nicked, you might get nicked as well. That, it sounds a scary trip so far.
No, it was one of them find yourselves kind of trips, wasn't it? You know, I'm sure we've all either done them or thought of them, and this was, you know, going full, you know, full peg into it. So literally, I got to Cape Town, got that under my belt, and all of the stuff that I did there and all of the problems, if you like, I had, all of the challenges, I thought, you know what, this is amazing. This is so, this is incredible. Maybe people might even pay to come and feel some of this, these feelings of adventure, but maybe in a little bit more of a secure way. And I came up with this idea called Bike Truck, Billy Bike Truck. Yeah. That's my Instagram, it's my Twitter and all that. And I put bikes in trucks and I would take them to Africa. You guys would fly in and then you would, you know, sort of pick up your bikes and then I would lead you on a, you know, a pretty cool adventure. But you know, the good thing about when I was going through that divorce, an amazing TV show had just come out. So I got divorced in 2005. 2004, a guy that I do a lot of work with called Charlie Borman just brought out Long Way Round, Hugh McGregor, Charlie Borman, going around the world, two mates, doing that thing that we've just been talking about, that big trip that we always want to do but often don't do. And it was so good that I was so traumatised in my divorce each day, I'd only watch a little bit of it. I'd watch like 30 minutes of Long Way Round because I didn't want it. There was 10-part series, 10 episodes, and I didn't want it to end. And it was getting me through this drama that I was going through, and it would be my little bit of a relief of a nighttime. I'd turn the telly on and I'd put the DVD on and I'd watch like 30 minutes of it, and it was I think they were like 58 minutes long, so the next day I'd watch the other bit and I kept saving it up. It was a bit like, you know, when you're a kid and you've got a bag of sweets but you're trying to you just don't want them to go, so you know. Anyway, I thought, fucking hell, that guy, what they've done is incredible. And that was inspirational for me. That was before I went on my big trip. So that was part of the ingredient. And then I remember saying to my mates, I was saying, you know what? I've been watching this Charlie Borman, Hugh McGregor thing. I reckon I could be Hugh McGregor's mate, because I like the way they crack on. And I reckon I crack on a bit like that. And I reckon me and Ewan, we could be like that. I could be his mate. And my mates in the pub, these are mates who were always asking about how's the divorce going, but they don't really want to know. And they're going, oh, fucking hell, is Billy, like, don't mention the divorce. Like, And they were all looking at me to say, that's a bit weird, Billy. You want to be Ewan McGregor's mate? And then I seen an advert in MCN, Motorcycle News, and it said, Charlie Borman is coming up to Squires in North Yorkshire. That's like a biker bar in North Yorkshire. And it's right out in the country, and loads of bikers go there, and they're doing wheelies outside, and everything. It's a proper nice place. And he's going to do a talk about Long Way Round. And I thought, wow, I'm going there. So I went from Newcastle, got down there on the bike, get in there, there's about 300 or 400 people in there. They've all paid about £7 each. And Charlie is like in there, but I don't really know, but Charlie, it's a bit like Tom Cruise. He wears them special wedges and that, like, you know, sort of, if you're listening, Charlie, you're just not that tall, really. and you could hardly see him. And people were shouting, and then he started talking, but he didn't have a microphone. He was just doing his gig, a chat with Charlie Borman, no microphone. He had a DVD, and he had one of them, you know, them, they're about 5 foot square stand-up kind of projector screens that you'd have in the office years and years ago. And they're on a tripod thing, you know, and they're all flipsy-flopsy and everything. He had one of them. And a DVD player. He didn't even have clips. He actually had a DVD player that he would fast forward and reverse, and he kept missing it and everything, like, you know. Anyway, the audience started giving him a bit of abuse. He was saying, "We can't hear you," because they couldn't. There was 300 or 400 people there, like, you know, with no sound. Yeah. And then they were saying, people at the back saying, "We can't see you, Charlie." So I went up to him and I said, "Charlie, there's a massive big oak table there, like for eating from." I said, "Get up on the table." So he went, "All right." So he gets up on the table and they were all like, "Oh, we can see you now, son," and all that. So that's great. And then there was a woman at the bar, and she's on the food, and she's got a microphone, and she goes, "Number 28, egg and chips." So I went up and said, can I borrow that microphone? And for the lad on, you know, and she went, "Oh, come on." So I gave him the microphone. So now we can see him, we can hear him. And he's going, "Oh, thanks, mate." And at the end of the gig, he got a big round of applause. Everyone loved it. But, you know, it was pretty shit, really. You know what I mean? It was like the stories, the content were brilliant, but the production was shit. So I went to see him, and there was a big queue for autographs. And I got there and I said, "All right, Charlie." And I shook his hand. And it was exciting to meet him, like, you know. And he said, "Do you want an autograph?" And I said, not really. I said, "I'm fine for that." I said, "I just wanted to say that I really enjoyed the stories." I said, "But the show was a bit shit, wasn't it? You know, couldn't see you, couldn't hear you." And he went, and he literally gave me a mouthful. He was like, "Phew." And I went, he said, what are you, like some sort of like theatre producer?" And I think it was the Scouse Irish thing inside my head. Part of it saying, "No, don't say that, Billy." And then I went, "Actually, Charlie, that's exactly where I am. I'm a theatre producer. And I think I could make your show." I worked in IT. I was an IT consultant. I had feck all to do with theatres. And I said, "I could make your show into a proper theatre show. We could take you around the country." And he went, "No way." I said, "Seriously, you've got great stories there. Just need good production." And he goes, "Wow. Well, so anyway," he said, "let's meet up in London. And we can go meet Ewan and Russ Malkin, the producer of the show and everything." Yeah. And I said, "Fantastic." So I was panicking a bit, but I said, "Great." So we had a date. Went down to London, got off at King's Cross, and years ago this is, remember, so in King's Cross used to be a machine that you could put a £5 note into, and it had a keyboard on the front, and you type in whatever you want to say on your business card, and you pick a template, and the template, you know, then they were all with roses and flowers and bollocks and that, like, you know, and I put theatre producer, Billy Ward, and my phone number. And I printed out 20 of them, and I went, you know, 10, I think it was, for a fiver. And off I go to the headquarters of Long Way Round. I don't know whether you guys watched it. I'm sure you probably did. Yeah. But the headquarters to me was like a shrine. It was like a fucking shrine. I mean, it was like to be there. And Ewan was over there, and the Ewan Spike was there, and the support vehicles were there. And, oh, it was amazing. Anyway, sat down, and I'd already done a spreadsheet, you know, £20 a night. 1,000 people a night, that's 20 grand a night revenue. We could do 30 or 40 theatres all around the country, do a proper tour, and, you know, we're going to rake in good money. And we went off and we did the Tyne Theatre in Newcastle upon Tyne, somewhere that was close to home that I knew.
Yeah.
It was beautiful. We sold out 1,000 seats, £20 a ticket, 20 grand. Had a fantastic night. And I, thank God, like, you know, it was like such a gamble, like, you know. And then after that, we did 37 nights all around the UK, literally all around the UK, Aberdeen, Cornwall, Manchester, Liverpool, Bradford, Birmingham, went on and on, and massively successful, sold out nearly every night. And we, you know, and that became the big connection with me and Charlie Borman. And that became the big thing that you were asking in the first place. How did you, Billy, some old bloke with white hair, Scouse Irish fella, how did you ever get into this game? Like, how did you live in the dream kind of thing? And it was because of Long Way Round. It was because Long Way Round and my divorce, they came together at the same time. That trauma triggered all them actions. A little bit ballsy with the owl. Yes, I'm a theatre producer, malarkey. And became friends with Charlie, and we've worked together really ever since, really, like, you know. So,
I mean, you're taking it, though, Billy. You're a self-confessed opportunist, aren't you? So that means that you say, with all the greatest moments in life, you say yes. You come away and you think, right, shit, how do I put that together? I just said yes.
Yeah.
You don't do you go, yep, no worries, see you, bye. And then you work it out.
I was looking at you and then sort of, when you were saying, Billy, you're a self-professed, and you were going to say liar, weren't you?
You know what? I see you. I love you to bits already. I just see you as an opportunist who sees the end goal, or maybe not even the end goal, sees something you want and you go for it. And like, if you hadn't said to Charlie that night, this is what I do. Yeah. I can make it happen. Yeah. You have to sometimes in life put your neck out on the line, don't you? And I think the good thing about the motorbiking world is you've all got that common bond, haven't you? And everyone who wanted to come and listen to Charlie speak at one of your productions were there for the common goal that they love the journey he's been on. And to think you have now been on those journeys yourself, I think it's just, you took a chance in life, and it's now, perhaps that divorce was the best thing that ever happened to you, because you wouldn't be walking this path if it hadn't.
No, you nailed it. Absolutely. You know, and now that, you know, that divorce was, that was 20 years ago. Like, so that all happened 20 years ago. And I've worked with Charlie ever since. We've been all over the world, all over South America, Central America, North America, all over Africa, specialised in Africa. Me and Charlie do a big Africa trip, like a commercial trip every year, where people can come and travel with Charlie Borman, have their own Long Way Round, have their own Long Way Down to Africa. I have this motto that you were just talking about, Dave, really implicitly, was to just say yes, to just see something and don't panic about it. Just say, yeah, I'll do that, you know? And there's a very, very cool guy in Long Way Round and Long Way Down. In fact, all the Long Way series, called Claudio von Planta. And he is the cameraman. And he is an absolute lunatic and the nicest man you'd ever meet in your life. And, he's travelled all over Africa, all over Afghanistan. You know, when the Russians invaded into Afghanistan all them years ago, years and years ago, when the Russians invaded Afghanistan, when they were at war, he was out there filming them. He interviewed Bin Laden when every other fecker in the world was looking for Bin Laden. He went out there, found him and interviewed him and actually did a full documentary all about Bin Laden and what his plans were and everything. This man is utterly cool, but he's a little bit odd as well, like a little bit wacky odd, like, you know. And he rang me up and said, a few years ago and said, Billy, let's go for lunch. We haven't seen each other for a while. So went for lunch in London, in Battersea. And he said, Billy, I keep seeing all your posts in Africa, elephants, lions, crocodiles. So boring. And I was like, he said, why don't you go to a place with proper historic culture? You know, the beginning of the universe of intellectual man. I said, well, where's that? He said, Iraq. Why don't we go and we travel across Iraq? And I said, I'm up for that. We're drinking, by the way. You know, it's a lot of drinking, bit of eating, drinking. And I'm going, and by the way, I'm a qualified safari guide. So over the years, I got trained in South Africa and I'm now a qualified safari guide. So I'm saying to Claudio, Claudio, I can go anywhere, dude. I'm fine. I can go anywhere. So he says, the great thing about going now, Billy, is that we are at war with ISIS. And I went,
that's a good thing.
Anyway, we carried on drinking. 2 weeks later, I get an email from Claudio. 2 weeks later, and, you know, was hung over from that gig. You know, it's all just good banter, great fun. 2 weeks later, I get an email saying nothing. No subject line, nothing inside the email. This is from Claudio. He's a bit that way. So it didn't stress me out. But then I looked at the attachment, double-clicked the attachment, my flight to Iraq. In 2 weeks' time. And he, like, not even, you know, are you free on these dates, Billy, or anything? He just sent me the booking, like, you know? And off we went. But anyway, the whole story of that and our ride to Mosul, and you know, we did film the fighting. We were on motorbikes. We filmed and met so many cool people, ordinary Iraqis, ordinary Kurdish people, and had an absolute, it sounds bizarre, but had an absolute incredible adventure, incredible time. And on the 2nd of June, this is my big plug, on the 2nd of June at the Isle of Man TT races on Mad Sunday, I am doing the whole show about my journey across Iraq and Kurdistan to the front line, to Mosul, with Claudio Von Planter, the star, I think the star of Long Way Round. And so if any of you bikers are out there and you're planning to come to the TT, please come and say hello and listen to my story. It's a cracking story, real life stuff. And yeah, I think you'll be entertained and I think maybe learn something from it as well.
I'll tell you what, we've got a little bit of mid-show housekeeping here. If you haven't already, please press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from so you never miss an episode, or you can watch Billy in all his glory on YouTube. Now, I think you'll agree, Ewan, this episode is, I think we've thrown the rule book out the window, yeah. Haven't we? We're just listening, we're hanging on for dear life, because a lot of the people that we speak to, Billy, it's about motorcycling as an aside to what their profession is, what they do on a daily basis, what they do to pay the bills, get the money rolling in. Well, that's what you do. This is motorcycling is you, and you are motorcycling, aren't you? So from that point of view, if you talk about getting that KTM, tear arson off down to Cape Town, what is the bike ownership journey then for you? Am I imagining it right by thinking you've had hundreds of motorbikes? You have hundreds of motorbikes. There's all different variations of what you do. What's your daily one? What's your go-to? What do you do? What do you jump on for pleasure?
Yeah.
What do you do for the mile munching? You must have so many different experiences of so many different bikes.
No, that's a good question, dude. You know, the weird thing with me is that when you do the stuff I do, you often don't need to buy a bike, because you know I'm well in with Triumph motorcycles, well in with BMW, well in with Harley Davidson. You know, and like, so if I'm doing a gig. You know, usually Triumph or BMW or Harley will lend me one of their bikes. Like, so me and Charlie have not long come back from Australia. We did an incredible trip across Australia where we had about 25 people with us, a real proper adventure ride. And Charlie was on the brand new BMW 1300. You know, new 1300 that's just come out literally a few months ago. He was on that, and I was on a brand new BMW 1250 Rally, which was like just a gorgeous bike. So yeah. I was there for
colours as well of that. Gorgeous,
fantastic bike. And you know, the incredible thing about adventure bikes now is that if you're a good rider, in fact, there's some great stuff in the TT where a guy has been on a GS adventure BMW with his camera on, and he's doing the circuit, and he's literally overtaking sports bikes. Like, you know, there's guys who are hanging off their bike with all the leathers on, and this guy's going past on it with his panniers and everything, and he's overtaking them because he's a bloody good rider. And the point I'm making is them bikes, whether it's a GS, whether it's a Triumph, you know, whether it's even the Harley, which are late into the game, really, in terms of the adventure bike, them bikes are universal. You can go across a desert, you can go across the TT course, you can eat miles on the motorways in Germany and Europe, or you can go off-road and up a mountain. I mean, they're incredibly universal. And that's what I've always been drawn to. I've had loads and loads of bikes. I get loads of opportunities. I did the launch of the Triumph Rally Pro, which is their competitor against BMW. And it was so, so cool doing the launch. And I learned so much about the detail of the bike, you know, the engine and all stuff like that. Them bikes are just superb. They ride like sports bikes if you want to ride them like that. But for me, the big key is to travel. For me, the riding motorbikes from the beginning has been fun. But then if you add travel to that, where you're actually meeting people and cultures and seeing different things and having these quite classic experiences. You know, there's a great guy out there called Ted Simon. Ted Simon is a real guru.
He's the godfather, isn't he?
Yeah, godfather, yeah. He's the real guru of motorcycle travel. He's about 90 now, still out there doing his stuff. And he said the great thing about riding motorcycles, you know, travel-wise, is the way serendipitous things happen. So, like, your bike, the engine blows up at the side of the road on your Royal Enfield in India, and which has happened to him. And he's sitting there thinking, shit, you know, there's oil peeing out the bottom. He's only got $50 in his pocket. He hasn't eaten for like a day. He doesn't really know where he is. And he thinks, well, that's the end of it. Like, there's the bike in pieces. In fact, it wasn't Royal Enfield. It was Triumph 500. That's what he was riding across the world. He did this in 1972. You know what I mean? Before we had the advantage of all that. And he sat there and he lit a cigarette and leaned against the tree. And when you asked him about it, I said, "So what were you panicking?" He said, "No, I just waited for something really cool to happen." So that's always been a major part of me instead of the sports bike game. Like a Kawasaki 900 is cool and I'd love to have a go of it and maybe go on a track day, you know, which I've never really done. But that's just for me fun. Whereas the adventure bike is it's a whole different sort of deal, really, like, you know.
I mean, obviously biking is your life and like Dave Arsh, I'm sure you've ridden all the best bikes in the world. Does it ever feel like a job? Do you ever get on a bike and think, "Oh, not again, my arse is still sore from last week. I don't want to do loads of riding today." Does it ever happen? I'm assuming it doesn't. I can see from the joy in your face, it's not a job, is it? You love this.
Now, you know what I miss, I suppose, sometimes, and it doesn't really answer your question directly, but I miss, because I live from idea to idea. For the last 20 years, I've lived from, "Oh, well, I think I'll ride to Cape Town," or, "Oh, I think I'll do this thing with Charlie Borman," or, "I think I'll, you know, I'll do this show in Melbourne," or I'll, you know, and all of them things give me opportunities to ride motorbikes in exotic places. Yeah. But what I don't get is a paycheck once a month and a pension and the knowledge that me 60 grand, 70 grand salary, whatever it was back then, is there, whatever happens.
Guaranteed,
And occasionally I miss that security of, you know, being self-employed for over 20 years now. And sometimes I think, I look at someone who's just bought a brand new, like literally a brand new BMW or a brand new Rally Pro 1200 Triumph, and they've paid, you know, between 15 and 20 grand with all the bits on. And I think, ooh, you know, fine, I rode both of them this year all over Australia. But I don't own one, and I often avoid buying one. I've got a brand new. This is in my house, but in my house I've got a brand new Triumph Thruxton R, brand new, with all of the special pipes on it, all of the special gear on it. Beautiful single seat racer racing spec, brand new, not 1 mile on the clock, because I got that from Triumph in 2017. So brand new from the factory. When I picked her up, it was pissing down with rain. So I put it in the van. And then I brought it back to my house in Whitley Bay. And my garage already had about 5 or 6 bikes in it. And I thought, I'm not putting that in there with them bastards. I'll put it in the living room. So I put it in the living room. And then I went away to Australia. And then I came back from Australia. Then I went to Africa. Came back from Africa. And it was in the middle of winter in the UK. And I kept looking at the bike thinking, God, it looks like a piece of artwork. I mean, it's just so beautiful, like, you know. And I've got this old piano, you know, an old sit up and beg piano. And it's next to that. And they just make the room look really cool. And so that winter went by. And then the same thing happened the next winter. So I've still got that bike, brand spanking new, no mileage on it, never, ever ridden.
Well, there's your pension. There's your pension, Billy. You know, you've got pensions in motorbike. You don't need a boring job and a career. You want to live life on the edge like you do. Long may it continue, because I've been inspired from, you know, just chatting to you already. The adventures you've been on, just one of your adventures, most people would never do in a lifetime, let alone all of it. You sometimes pinch yourself and think, you know, you've travelled the world with people you clearly care about, riding some brilliant machinery. I mean, it's a dream job.
No, it is. I do pinch myself sometimes, and like on the 2nd of June, I've got my show at the TT, and that's going to be pretty cool. And I'm going to have a week at the TT, so hopefully I'll see John McGuinness and all that crowd, and I'll hang out a bit, and so that'll be really cool. I mean, you know, the TT. By the way, if anyone's listening to this and you've not been, you have to go to the TT. It's a world life thing, because if you don't do it, when you get there, you'll cry. Because when you get there, you'll cry if you've never been before, because you'll cry about all the other years that you've wasted by not going to it. Because when John McGuinness goes past you at 175 miles an hour with the front wheel in the air on Aggie's Leap, which, and you're in the garden leaning over the privet hedge with a can of beer, and he's so close you could nearly touch him. He's probably about a metre and a half away. at 175 mile an hour. The vibrations go through your body. They even give you a little twinge down below, like just a little twinge. So I've got that. And then on the 27, 28, 29th of June, I do the ABR Festival. That's a big adventure bike rider festival. It's a bike rider magazine. They run this festival every year. I've got that, which is great. You get 30,000 bikers from all over UK, Ireland, Scotland, Wales. Adventure bikes, sports bikes, rally bikes, off-road bikes. Everyone gets together, loads of music. It's a bit like a big music gig, but for bikers, like, you know, so it's really, really cool. Loads of speakers there, you know, who are telling their stories about their adventures. And then I literally finished that on, I think, the 30th. And then I've got to get to Heathrow and fly from Heathrow to Cape Town, where I'm doing a rally from Johannesburg to Kenya over 3 weeks. And that's not on a bike. That's driving a car. We've got this six-wheel Land Rover. Do you ever see one of them? Nice. You see them in airports years ago, where they'd be converted into a fire hydrant thing, you know, fire machine. And we're doing this. It's called the Africa Rally. And we're going to drive from Joburg all the way to Kenya through 7 countries, Botswana, Mozambique, Namibia, Zimbabwe, Zambia. And then after that, we're in Australia with Charlie to do our annual Australian trip. So that's my sort of coming few months. And I realized that is like pretty unusual. And I don't make shed loads of money, by the way. You know, I make enough money to sort of be okay, but I'm not like sitting there raking it all in kind of thing, you know.
It's not about the money for you though, is it, Billy? It's not about you've categorically said that.
Yeah.
That's part of your MO. It's not about the money.
Yeah. You know what the hard thing is now, Ewan, you can relate to this, I think, is getting old.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, Billy. Dave's loving that as a young one there.
I threw it to Dave. I just threw it to him then, you know.
You two were getting on famously. You was in best friend territory there, Billy.
I still am. It doesn't matter how old you are. You're older than you were yesterday, and we are all getting old. And I think, you know, long may what you do continues, and I hope it does. Running around in a circle for me finished many years ago. My body gave up on me. But I suppose the good thing about what you do, Billy, however old you're still doing it at, you can do it. As long as you've got your wits about you, and you can stay vertical, you can stay upright and not fall over. That's the beauty of what you do.
Yeah. No,
Billy,
you're
right. Just to put in there, sorry, I think there's a real point to what Ewan's making there, because you mentioned it before about where this stuff comes from. Part of it comes from a place of real kind of personal pain and a problematic time in your life. It's dressed up now as mental health, and it's reverted to in different ways. But the other side of it as well, mentally, from the emotional, and then put that in with the motor skills, as Ewan's talking about, sitting on a bike, everything's going, brain's going, fingers are going, feet are going. Mm. And again, without being a condescending fella and asking you the question of that, because most of what keeps your motor skills going is getting lost in what you're doing, doesn't it? And you get on a bike, and that's all you're thinking of.
Yeah,
you're absolutely in the moment. That's all you're doing, being able to get from A to B and making sure this beautiful contraption that you sat on works perfectly, and your body's got to work in harmony with what you're doing. That keeps things ticking over, the grey matter ticking over, doesn't it?
So it just gives you that time to think and not be distracted by lots of other things. Yeah. And as you said, your body's in muscle memory zone where you're just doing stuff, but you can just think. You know, me and Charlie got off with a sponsorship gig from one of these intercom systems so that we and the people on the bikes could all talk to each other while we're on this trip across Africa, Australia, etc. And me and Charlie said, no way. We don't want to talk to each other. We just want to be in that helmet, enjoying the visuals, enjoying the feeling of being on a motorcycle, enjoying that privacy and that calmness that you can just get by being alone in your helmet. And so we said no. And like, you know, everyone was saying, oh, yeah, that's a few thousand pounds worth of equipment you're saying no to there, Billy. You could really, you know, no way. No, so we've never done it. We don't have any intercom systems in the helmets.
Wow.
And fine, we see the benefits. Don't get me wrong. We totally see the benefits. But for me and for Charlie at this stage, anyway, we just like to be on the bike watching. You know, we're in positions where elephants are crossing the road in front of you and you're slowing down, you know, just give them space to let them cross. And they finally go across, and then another 10 kilometres there's a load of zebras, big herd of zebras, and they're all running across the road. And then further down, you know, you've got like sort of antelope, and it just goes on. And you just want to absorb all that, you know?
Sounds like a dream. Honestly, Dave, can you imagine, like, my rides are so boring, but I just
want to know, elephant.
Billy, your life is fascinating. And I'm not surprised you get to talk all around the world about what you've seen and what you do, because just that image then of the zebras and the elephants, you know, in Africa, it's something most of us will never get the chance to see, let alone being on a motorbike. I mean, it's brilliant. You need to do, tell me you've done a book, because if you've not written a book, you need to do a book with lots of pictures in it.
Now, I haven't done a book, but I keep thinking on doing a book. But go to charlieborman.com where you can get the details of how to come and do a trip with us across Africa. Yeah. Do an easier one in Morocco. Morocco is like just like on our doorstep, and you can be in the 12th century. There's times in Morocco where you think Jesus is going to walk around the corner like in sandals and robes, because you are totally out of your zone. You're in this Morocco in medieval times, and yet it's like 2.5-3 hours on a plane, you know. It's on your doorstep. So, you know, go to charlieborman.com. you can see our Australian trips, you can see our Africa trips, you can see Morocco and anything else that we're playing around in, you know.
Billy, we've taken up so much of your time already, mate. The final question to all of these podcasts is talking us through your fantasy bike ride, which includes which bike you're on, where you're having this particular ride, and if you've got a soundtrack or music you're listening to. I mean, I'm asking you to think hypothetically now, but then you've just got so much to draw on. I mean, have you done your dream bike trip thousands of times in different places all over the world?
Yeah, it sounds a bit brash of me, but, you know, I think I have already done them. And, you know, we finish a trip like the Road of Death. Have you heard of the Road of Death, like near La Paz? Like, so in South America,
no.
Like in the Road of Death is
famous.
That
way, yeah.
Famous, called the Road of Death, because so many people have died on it, you know, fallen off the edge and that. And I've done that, I think I've done that 10 times. And people get to the end of that and they think, well, that's my world. That's my bike world dream, you know, fantasy. I've done it. And the clients that are with us here, they go, tick, I've done it, Billy. Yeah. Thank you. And people come up to you and shake your hand and say, Billy, all my life I've wanted to do that trip. And it could have been Bavion's Kloof in South Africa. It could have been the Sarni Pass in Lesotho. It could have been the Cape Town to, you know, to Victoria Falls. And people will literally shake your hand and say, that's my world. I can die now. I can literally die now and think I did it. Yeah. And I don't have this big ride in my mind's eye that I want to do. I'm sure there would be one if I thought hard enough, but I don't really have one there. And music, I don't really play music in my, I don't wear any tones, so I don't really, I like to hear the engine, and I can feel my body and feel the engine and the vibration of the engine and feel where the clutch is. And if I had music on, I think I would lose a bit of that. So I'd love to do the Dakar Rally, but I did the Dakar in 2007 when I was only like, you know, a youngin. And or youngish, and I would love to do the Dakar now, but I get to the Dakar quite a lot. I was at the Dakar last year, the year before. I filmed a fair bit of the Dakar. A guy called David Knight, he's a 5 times world champion. He did the Dakar, and I went and filmed him and did the backstory and in Saudi Arabia. And I look at how tough them guys are now. I mean, it's just like a load of marathons all thrown in together. I couldn't do the Dakar now. They wouldn't let you in, even, like, you know, they would see all the white hair and they'd think, sorry, dude, keep the singing, Tom. I mean, that's what they'd say.
They'd only need to speak to you for a couple of minutes, Billy, to know that you would be more than robust to make sure that you get yourself through. I mean, this has just been an absolute pleasure, hasn't it? I mean, sadly, unfortunately, that's probably about it for this week's full chat. We've had so much from you, mate. It's been wonderful. Powered, of course, by Bikeshore. As the UK's largest independent motorcycle insurance broker, Bikeshore will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your annual bike, scooter or moped insurance.
Yeah, honestly, Billy, a massive thank you from Prots and myself and everyone who's tuning in, because you have been a whirlwind of energy, knowledge and stories. I've absolutely loved it. Remember, Billy is on tour at the Isle of Man Sunday, the 2nd of June. He's doing his talk, and I'd love to be there just from hearing you and chatting to you now on this podcast. What a life you have led and what a wonderful bloke you are. So thank you for joining us.
Thanks, boys. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to let me loose like that. You were very, very cool. Thank you.
You're an amazing fella, Billy. Don't forget to follow us on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from so you can never miss an episode, or you can watch the whole show on YouTube.
As ever, from me and Prutz, thank you so much for watching, and we can't wait to see you next time. All the best.